Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. Yesterday, I was on a break. I tweeted, I'll be on a break tonight. House cores with destainer and sterilizing bleach. And people have been laughing their ass off. Some people were saying, he has tasted blood again. Last time I cleaned my house with sterilizing bleach, I got accused of being a murderer by Ramsey Paul. Holy shit. I did it again, I guess. I got away with it once more. Yesterday, I again cleaned my house with my cleaning material. We have two very important subjects today. The first subject, and I'll be back to making clips. I think that I'm feeling good now. I have resolved a lot of cleaning I had to do, lots of responsibilities that were on my shoulders. And so I think I'm ready to come back to clipping. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? We have two big subjects today. The manifesto that we will be talking about, the Nashville Shooter Manifesto, has been obtained in part by Steven Crowder. And it's quite interesting to see the reactions of the mainstream media losing their shit over this, trying to see doubt. It's like, if you're going to see doubt, give me something that you have that's solid. And we'll get to the whole thing later. But the first subject, I want to talk about Andrew Wilson and his absolutely perfect performance against the atheist debater Matt Dillahunty. Holy shit, did he own him. It was an absolute rape of blood sports, and it was beautiful to see. Total ownage. And it was fair. People say, oh, well, he went into personal attacks. He didn't go into personal attacks as long as personal attacks weren't thrown his way. So it was an absolute poetic performance of the kind we were having back in the blood sports days. This is the best blood sports moment since 2018. You should definitely go to the Modern Day Debate channel and watch the whole thing, because I can't review the whole 1 hour. But eventually, Matt Dillahunty steps up and refuses to participate to the open discussion part of the conversation because he totally got destroyed. And holy shit, I want to give you the context where all of this happens. Things that I didn't know. I wish I had known this. But I learned things about this at the very end as the personal insults started flying. Wow, I didn't know that about Matt Dillahunty. See, Matt Dillahunty was a man with a wife. And you know these porn websites? You know this extra page where they want you to click, but it's like when you go there, it's going to be a whole different kind of porn. With, you know, the woman have dick in this, they have dicks in this kind of porn. Matt Dillahunty clicked. Matt Dillahunty went where many of you guys may have never went. Matt Dillahunty clicked, and he clicked for good. After he was gone from the, I don't know who initiated the divorce with his wife, him or his wife. Anyways, after the story with his wife was finished, Matt Dillahunty started a relationship with someone who has just blocked me on Twitter, Arden Hart. Arden Hart, a pornographic star of the trans pornography world. That is, men with dicks who film and pose as females for the pornographic performance. I didn't know this. I didn't know that this is what Matt Dillahunty was going for. Matt Dillahunty got pulled in by the trans porn stardom and started going out with this person, Arden Hart, who has now blocked me. And by the way, blocked me not because I said anything to these, to them. All I said yesterday was I commented quickly on the Andrew Wilson affair, and I said, hey, that was a good argument that Andrew did at the beginning. This person blocked me. Now, I didn't even know at the time of my commentary that Matt Delahunty was not just gay. He's gay. He's going for these trans porn stars. Okay. Interesting. But it totally changed my perspective of the debate, because now I know that as Andrew Wilson was making all these arguments against secular degeneracy, basically, and especially on the angle of the truth, of the question of that secular humanism currently is asking its proponents to give up the truth, to convert the feelings of people who feel like they are females. And that was a beautiful pillar to build his argument on. That was absolutely the best performance I've seen from a Christian debater in my life. Andrew Wilson, I kneel to your godly performance. That was really the best I've seen. And I've been seeing all these debates on atheism. I've been hosting them. I've been producing them. And I've been watching them. I know what this business is. I know all of the arguments. But holy shit, did he destroy someone else who supposedly knows all the argument? Matt Delahunty, who got brought on a piece of territory that he wasn't used to and that probably was reasoning very deep inside of him. Because there he is, you know, after his hetero marriage. There he is having sex with Arden Hart, a trans porn star who describes themselves as trans adult content creator, reptilian MILF, host and producer on the line, she/her, professional inquiries. So at the end of this interaction where Andrew Wilson says to Matt Delahunty, hey Matt, tell your husband I said hi. Now I get it. Oh, okay. So here, Andrew Wilson was standing for the truth of the biological identity of someone. He is your husband. From the perspective of a Christian who believes that men are born men and made men by God, and women are born woman and made woman by God, and nothing you can do in your life can change this. That was Andrew Wilson expressing, making, actualizing the point of his whole intro statement, which is say hi to your husband, which I originally interpreted as, okay, so Matt Delahunty is gay, I didn't know this. But no, he's gay, but he doesn't know it. He's gay in a self-deceptive manner. Now, this is the ultimate own edge that you can dream of in terms of calling someone gay. It's to tell them, say hi to your husband, and in fact, you have a husband, you just don't know it. Ouch! Ouch! You have a husband, Matt Delahunty, you just don't know it. Say hi to him. I know you guys are deceiving yourself into your whole sex game that it's not your husband, but it's your husband. What the fuck? I had never thought this could happen, let alone that this could happen between two people I've been knowing. Andrew Wilson, much respect to him. Matt Delahunty, he's an creationist, the anti-creationist debater, very much atheist and secularist debater with the whole catalog of arguments. could I say that I have respect for him. I've always found what he does, it is complete in its own way. You know, I guess I could say I had some respect for him. But his total inability to argue with Andrew Wilson, as Andrew Wilson kind of pulls the difficulty level one notch up, and Matt Delahunty was powerless. He was incapable of answering. And I want to reveal to you the key that Andrew Wilson has used. It's not a key that would have been giving trouble to me, but for a Matt Delahunty, it was impossible to resolve. And you know, much respect for the brilliance of Andrew Wilson. He has done his research. He knew where to catch Matt Delahunty, and he caught him in a place that was absolutely beautiful to see. And to James, you know, poor James, because James organized this physical debate in a physical room. And I know that James puts a lot of effort on these events, and it doesn't bring much people, you know, live. It brings a lot of viewers, but, you know, you're doing this for a room of 30 or whatever. And I know that James is putting so much effort in these, and that he felt that as Matt Delahunty disappeared from the stage, gone, that it was kind of a sad event. I'm sure he was frustrated as a debate host. He wanted the debate to happen. But at the same time, I say, don't be ashamed of anything, James, because you caught what you had to catch here. Sometimes the debate is the escape. Sometimes it is the fleeing of the other side. And you caught what there was to be caught here. You captured reality. And the reality is Delahunty doesn't have an answer to the big question that Andrew threw at him, which is simply, all right, I'm giving up God. Okay, so let's go into the debate strategy of Andrew Wilson. Here, Rachel was very proud of her husband. She says, in an incredible blowout, achieved right in his opening statement, Paleo Chris Kahn made Matt Delahunty rage quit a live headline debate tonight. Must watch. And here you have the moment where Matt Delahunty starts explaining that he's not going to engage in the open conversation phase.
Preparation that I went through and what people were here for.
You're so indignant.
Keep interrupting me.
I am. Okay. You're so indignant.
Would the moderator like to step in so that I can finish what I'm saying?
Please, Matt. How dare someone have an opposing worldview?
I'm not going to sit here and dignify what was supposed to be a debate about Christianity versus secular humanism, which one's better for the world.
Yes.
With someone who clearly showed up with an agenda.
The thing here is Matt Delahunty is making up something. Andrew Wilson has not drifted from the theme of the debate. Which one is better for the world? Well, Andrew Wilson stands here and says, secular humanism is not good. So that is an argument. It must be addressed. The point of Andrew Wilson is to say, your philosophy as it stands, as you implement it, and as it leads these people to deny the truth, basically, on the gender question specifically, is a lie. And no, a lie is not good. So that's an argument that's totally responsive to the theme of the debate. Of course, Matt Delahunty, what he wanted Andrew Wilson to fall for one of his known traps. He wanted Andrew Wilson to come and say, oh, well, I define the truth of God that way and this way and that. But Andrew Wilson didn't. Andrew Wilson went creative. He threw something at Matt Delahunty that Matt had never seen and he had no answer for, which is Andrew Wilson decided to suppose I grant that God doesn't exist. So I'm a secular humanist just like you. That was a beautiful approach. So first he says, all right, I'm abandoning God. I'm a secular humanist. But suppose that my flavor of secular humanism led me to believe everything that I believe in as a Christian. So that is the philosophical zombie Daniel Dennett with his philosophical zombie is like, imagine a human being who has all of the outputs of a regular human being, but he doesn't feel things. He experiences nothing inside. Now, of course, if you trigger the philosophical zombie and you say, hey, do you feel something? The philosophical zombie will say, yes, I feel something, but he's lying. The philosophical zombie of Daniel Dennett is, what if I was to take all of the outputs that you see from a human, but inside I put nothing, I just reproduce the output, is that thing feeling something? And of course it isn't, by definition. The beauty of Andrew Wilson's approach here was to say, I'm going to be the philosophical zombie of Christianity. I carry all of the beliefs of Christianity, all of the behaviors and preferences for society that a Christian would believe in. But I don't believe in God. I don't have a religious text. I don't have any of the inner Christianity thing. So I'm a secular humanist who has just converged toward the belief that, oh yeah, homosexuality is bad, and oh yeah, you know, respect thy neighbor. And, oh yeah, murder is, two shall not murder. But I don't explain these preferences through any sort of superior God or supernatural God. And the point of Andrew Wilson is to say, I claim that my flavor of secular humanism is better than yours because I don't ask people to lie. And this is where, boom, second attack by Andrew Wilson. Now that Andrew Wilson has constructed a completely sealed, you know, fundamentally sealed mirror version of secular humanism, and now he brings the focus on one question, and he says, my flavor of secular humanism is better than yours because I don't ask people to lie about who's a male and who's a female. Now, what is it? And now he puts the burden of demonstration onto Matt Delahunty, and he says, why is it that I should follow your secular humanism, which asks people to lie about people's gender, rather than mine, which asks people to tell the truth about people's gender? Matt Delahunty has zero response for this. And look at this. This is the moment where he finishes his intro statement.
Hey, James, I just sent you a message.
So it's like, well, normally that would be the point for open discussion, but it's like, no, he sent a message to James in cell phone.
All right. We are going to kick it into an open discussion. So 50 minutes and let's kick it.
No, I don't think so. I'm not going to sit here and dignify the preparation that I went through. And what people were here for.
You're so indignant.
Keep interrupting me.
I am. Okay. You're so indignant.
Would the moderator like to step in so that I can finish what I'm saying?
Please, Matt. How dare someone have an opposing worldview?
I'm not going to sit here and dignify what was supposed to be a debate about Christianity versus secular humanism, which one's better for the world.
Yes.
With someone who clearly showed up with an agenda that has nothing to do with that.
It's not an agenda. It is a super interesting thought experiment. What if I was to take my Christianity and put a different label on it? Could you even prove that you are distinct in your way of deriving what is good and bad for the fate of humanity? That is not a dishonest approach. That is not a deceptive red herring. That is the question, and it is so important. And oh my God, would this have been a beautiful debate if it could happen? It's already beautiful just Andrew Wilson delivering this idea to the world was enough fucking beautiful for me to be super enthusiastic and even satisfied that the debate has happened here. But the debate has happened, but there's one side that has nothing to say, and it's the side of Matt Delahunty.
Someone who refers to trans people as deranged lunatics who will self-terminate if you dare to question them.
How am I wrong?
And here, the pornographic taste of Matt Delahunty may be playing in the back of his mind. This guy is not only watching porn involving female people posing as females that have dicks, he's also partnered with one. And so when he hears Andrew Wilson says they are deluded lunatics who could self-terminate if we don't lie to them, he's triggered. Now, you have to grant to Andrew Wilson that this is a factual statement. What Andrew Wilson is saying when he says lunatics, he's saying they are wrong about the state of truth. They are dysphoric. But that is the term we would use in a psychiatric hospital. That is a term that a psychologist would use. They are dysphoric. They are beside the truth. They have something shaped in their mind that doesn't come from a reality. And then on the question of self-terminate, it may be a rude and crude way to say it, but it makes no doubt that there is a very, very high suicide rate within the trans population. So granting these two things, Andrew Wilson is absolutely correct with these statements. They are not a personal attack against Matt. Now, for those of you, I've seen some people in the comment section of this video saying, James or, well, Andrew, those are personal attacks. Those are invectives. Now, he didn't say, Matt, your partner is about to self-terminate. He didn't say, Matt, you are about to self-terminate. He says there is a generally high rate of suicide in the trans community. That is what his statement means. And without me understanding that Matt Delahunty was going out with one of these trans people, I went through this and understood everything that was said by Andrew as a statement about the trans community in general, not a personal attack. It is your responsibility, Matt Delahunty, to not take offense because you happen to be in a personal situation that fits the societal description that Andrew Wilson is giving. So I totally disagree with all claims that Andrew Wilson started with personal insults. That is not true. Andrew Wilson was talking about a societal phenomenon. Now, if we're debating, I don't know, the death penalty, and I arrive in the debate, and I don't know, someone that I really love that has received the death penalty, it would be my responsibility not to feel personally targeted by the arguments made by my opponents. I couldn't come and say, oh, well, no, you cannot adopt this view because it reminds me of my father who died from the death penalty. That would be trying to imperialistically control the state of the public space based on paranoid perceptions that what is said on the public space relates to my own private life. That is my responsibility. I have to deal with the emotional burden of having had someone killed by the death penalty. Now, it didn't happen. It's just a hypothetical. But Matt Delahunty cannot come to a debate about something and say, oh, this argument is off the table because it reminds me of my trans boyfriend. Cannot do that because that is precisely the mechanism by which the left censors free speech. That is the mechanism that we've seen all of these liberals and leftists across the years bring as an argument that keeps certain right-wing beliefs from being expressed onto the public space.
You're wrong, Matt.
Someone who misrepresents a quote from a debate where I said I wouldn't make a law about 9-year-olds having sex being legal with respect to the 9-year-olds, not that I was in any way in favor of it and that I was actually opposed to it, which I addressed during that debate.
Now, this misrepresentation supposedly is that Andrew Wilson brought the fact in his intro statement that Matt Dillahunty wouldn't be for legislating against 9 years old having sex consensually. Now, that was the statement of Andrew Wilson. Matt Dillahunty would not legislate 9 years old having sex. And Andrew Wilson was putting his own personal beliefs as a kind of alternative against this. He was saying, I would legislate. I would legislate according to my belief, 9 years old shouldn't have sex. And I would legislate to find the people around this event happening of a 9 years old having sex, and I would put them in jail. Now, Matt Dillahunty claims, no, my statement in this debate was that I wouldn't legislate. But I also said later in the debate that I wasn't for 9 years old having sex. I just would not legislate. But that is not a misrepresentation, therefore, from Andrew Wilson. Andrew Wilson said, you wouldn't legislate. And you confirm here, you wouldn't legislate. So what you claim to be a misrepresentation is the fact that there is missing context on other things that you've talked about. But the initial statement of Andrew Wilson wasn't about these other things. Do I personally like 9 years old having sex? It's not the question. Andrew brought the question of legislation and properly reported on your belief on legislation. If you want to bring in further context, you can. But that is not Andrew Wilson's responsibility. His responsibility is to make sure that his statement is elementarily true. And he offered the alternative to your belief. He thinks that we should legislate, and he would legislate, against 9 years old having sex. Again, Andrew Wilson comes out victorious on this second accusation.
But moreover, this is not remotely an honest interaction on the front of whether or not secular humanism is valuable.
Well, it is, because he's offering you a thought experiment in which secular humanism as a label would be applied on a set of beliefs that are typically seen as Christian. And he's asking you, let's debate this. Show me how your secular humanism is better than my secular humanism. An absolutely brilliant thought experiment. And there you are, refusing to engage in it because you can't. You don't have anything to say. And the whole point of Andrew Wilson, why this thought experiment matters, is absolutely correct. It's because you will realize that there is a circular structure of self-justification around what is good in the head of the secular humanist, as you think there is in the head of the Christian. And that is beautifully said. That is exactly why I'm a moral nihilist. It's because next time I see Andrew, I want to hug him virtually and say, Andrew, the reason I'm a moral nihilist is that I've always wanted to survive this vicious argument that you pulled against Matt Dillahunty. That is why. That is why. If you want to criticize Christians for having circular self-justification in affirmed axioms, you will have to grant that anyone who has a moral belief of moral objective truth has the same defect of circularity. That is very important. Someone like Matt Dillahunty, someone like Sam Harris, working for the good of the people, for the well-being of conscious creatures, however they want to frame it. What Andrew Wilson says about this circularity in this debate is, good is good. And it's fascinating because it parallels and mirrors an expression that we sometimes hear on the side of Christianity, God is good. So basically, the Christians are circular in saying, well, God is good. Goodness exists, therefore God must exist. God exists, therefore goodness must exist. So it's a circular definition between imagined realities about the world and outcomes of it. And yet, what Andrew Wilson exposes is you, Matt Delahunty, as a secular humanist, have the exact same circle, except you don't say God is good, you say good is good. Well, what is goodness? Well, of course, goodness exists. I mean, people can feel good. And okay, so why is it good to feel good? Well, because it's good. Good is good. The circular reflection of the secular humanist who believes in an objective morality of any kind. Andrew Wilson, all I can say is bravo. And the finish on it, Andrew Wilson shows enough blood sports etiquette to keep the personal insults up to the right moment. He waits for the first personal insult to come on the side of Delahunty.
Because this, when he presented his position here, has nothing to do with secular humanism.
It absolutely has to do. If you cannot justify the axiomatic structure and epistemological structure of why you think that your belief, your particular set of beliefs around gender and around gender affirmation are good, then you don't have a behavior, you don't have a system of prescriptive morality of any kind, neither objective nor even well-structured subjectively. You have nothing. That's why you can't stand there and argue with Andrew Wilson.
From the get-go, it's all about me. Matt thinks. I'm given what Matt thinks.
And that is stunning. You don't criticize the other opponent to have properly done his research and to be coming up with actual beliefs that you've expressed before. That is actually commendable. No matter how much you may disagree with someone, it's commendable that they come at you not with, oh yeah, far-right people tend to believe this, and oh yeah, right-wingers tend to believe that, and oh, conservatives say this. No, Andrew Wilson did so much research that he was capable of coming at Matt Delahunty with specific things that he believed in. That is absolutely commendable. And at this point, it's like, oh, well, all of your criticism of him fall flat. You seem to be making up stuff to justify leaving the debate. And three, you finish with a compliment? Holy shit.
Matt's position.
I came in with the secular humanist manifesto. I came in with positions that aren't just
positions.
That aren't merely my position.
Oh, well, as long as multiple people hold the position,
this guy's not serious enough.
See, it doesn't matter that you've come up with other positions. He's criticizing your positions. It's even better. He's taking the subset. He's taking the subset that you're most certain of. What did you want Andrew to do? To argue against beliefs you don't hold? What the fuck is this request?
And I'm leaving, James. If you want a refund, you
well,
let me
good
know.
Day, sir.
And absolutely beautiful, James. Andrew says, "Well, good day, sir." And I mean, I didn't know the clip would end here, but here's the later part.
Well, good day, sir.
Well, good
and
day,
I'll
sir.
Cover your refund, Mr. Cool. Matt.
He just said he'd cover my
I
refund.
I would cover his refund.
Sorry for the sun.
Nope. No, I'm not going to dignify a debate with someone who walked in to trash talk people and be smug and all of the things that he's being right now. He's already said he will cover my expenses. You don't have anything to worry about. This debate is over. Goodbye.
And James was trying to keep the debate alive. Of course, that's his job as a host. Oh my God, I would have liked to have James' face because we just hear his voice in the background. He wasn't being smug. And by the way, you had you had decided, if you want to take any of his interruption as being indicative of him being smug, then he became being smug. He began being smug after you already had announced that you were leaving, that you were not participating to the debate. He has all of the right to be smug against someone who spits on the audience that he had promised a debate to, but who doesn't show up when it counts. These people have physically traveled to be there. They're big fans of you at times, and they would like to hear you.
Goodbye.
Jackass.
Did you call?
And now you have just tempted Andrew Wilson, who has a radical ethic of note-taking. You've just opened the door of personal insults by saying jackass. And a lot of people are saying that there was disproportionality in the reply of Andrew Wilson, because Andrew Wilson is about to say hi to your husband. But I would argue that there is no disproportionality, that it was totally in place. First, I believe that disproportionality is fine in escalating blood sports etiquette. Disproportionality is to punish a little stronger than you've been attacked to make sure to stabilize the behavior toward a productive conversation. And I totally believe that you should be able to add a little more juice to the attack when you first get attacked without having called for it. So here, jackass, let's be clear. Jackass is a gendered term, and it is an anti-male term. It is specifically used in situations where someone displays overly male cognition. And as such, it is already a very personal attack, because Andrew Wilson is a man. He is a high testosterone individual. And therefore, to attack him in his being and his conception of himself by calling him a jackass, which is a very gendered insult, to me falls within the category of opening the door to gendered insults, personal insults, insults that target features of the self and features of your sex. I think it is totally fine once the word jackass has been expressed. Now, the left wants to see all insults as potentially gendered, except jackass. The left wants you to believe that whore, bitch, whatever, hoe, is all gendered insults, but they often refuse to identify as gendered insults those insults that are meant to attack men. I think it is perfectly fine in the blood sports etiquette for Andrew Wilson to come back with this.
Did you call me a jackass, Matt? Well, you and your husband have a good day, man.
You and your husband have a good day, Matt. Right after making a whole intro statement, what he was making the case that calling trans people woman when they are biological males is a lie. And therefore, to Andrew Wilson, the wife of De La Hunty is a husband. And this is where it is the finally, absolutely beautifully dropped of, I have a conception of truth. And in that conception of truth, which I happen to agree with, in that conception of truth, you have a husband, not a wife. And it's not because your husband specializes in disguising as a woman to film porn, because there's simply more interest for female-looking dick havers on the internet, that I won't call her a wife for that. I'll call her what I believe she is. She's your husband. The insult is some of the most beautiful insult I've ever seen. like as an artist who enjoys hurting people's feeling, I have never seen something that beautiful. And I want to thank Andrew Wilson. I'm almost crying. How beautiful this was. Respect to our friend Andrew Wilson. That was absolute poetry. Oh my God. So that is it for my review of Andrew Wilson. And now we will talk about the Shooter Manifesto. DK Shadow says Matt's ego was more devastated than Gaza. Popcorn Power says all JF needs to know is that Matt's wife is useless to inseminate. Exactly. I don't even need to call her a wife or a husband. To me, the question is she a valid insemination target? Vicious says, Andrew is a Christ cock and uses many fallacies when he debates, but this was enjoyable. It was absolutely beautiful. I'm sure there would be a good debate to be had between him and me on Christianity. But that's it. He couldn't catch me, certainly, with the particular trap that he has set here especially for De La Hunty. Dino Logovic says, JF, it's not homosexual if your partner pretends he is a woman. I think it is. I think it is. All right, today we had an important release from Steven Crowder, The Manifesto of the Trans Nashville School Shooter, leaked, full of anti-white hate. And the mainstream media is so panicked at realizing that going forward, they will not have a single interesting scoop. At this point, people who want secrets that are important to public questions, they go to people like Steven Crowder when they have some info to drop. They won't go to Fox News. They won't go to CNBC. They won't go to CNN. They go to Steven Crowder and they ensure that it's released. Look, it was a mess of communication on the side of the police today. Steven Crowder comes out live on his show, reveals these 3 pages of the manifesto. The police initially states something along the lines of we have not released this, we are investigating who has released this, and this is certainly not a manifesto coming from the crime scene evidence. And I was like, are they making a play on words? Because the manifesto wasn't found at the crime scene, it was found at the house of the shooter. And are they trying to fake deny that maybe it's not the true manifesto? That was very gaslighting in terms of a behavior from the police. This is not a manifesto that comes from the crime scene. Okay, but there was never a question that it came directly from the crime scene. There was question that it was found maybe at his apartment or home or whatever. And the second statement they state after this, which was a total mess, they say, we are not in a position to confirm the authenticity of the manifesto. So now at this point, that's coded language to say it's authentic. Because if it wasn't authentic, you could easily say we have never seen any manifesto that looks like this. To our knowledge, this is a prank. But if we are not in a position to confirm, it means you really don't want to say that it is, but it is authentic. That's what I interpret from the second police statement. But even then, why not clarify? And then there's a second layer of obfuscation where we have mainstream media coming out and trying to blur, you know, maybe it's not true. Maybe it's taken out of context. Phil Williams from NC5 states, multiple sources have told me that the selective leak of 3 pages of the Covenant school shooting manifesto is extremely misleading. People who have read the whole thing say there's something in there for everybody. Another said she hated everybody. So the whole idea is to downplay here the anti-white hatred that's visible from these 3 pages. Unbelievable. The shooter killed white children. The shooter wrote in his manifesto, let's kill these white children. And you're telling me that there is context in some other pages that will totally change my view of the statement, let's kill these white children? You're telling me that I should wait for page 47? And so I was marking this this appeal to context here. And I said, see, you have to understand the full context of our statement. Kill those crackers. It's much less worse than it seems when you read her page 47 meditations. Are you fucking kidding me? Even if there was some comment about blacks and Muslims and Arabs and Jews, it would remain the case that in some page of this manifesto, she was talking about killing white people, and she went out and killed white people at the specific school that she was describing in her manifesto, which she was describing as a cool school of privileged white people who had blonde hair. And it turns out that a lot of the people who died had relatively pale hairs at this school. So let's analyze the content of what Steven Crowder has released, but I can't believe the behavior of mainstream media. They're losing it. And in fact, it went so bad at some point during the day that the Washington Times, I'm trying to find, the Washington Times, unbelievable. I can't find the tweet, but they had to apologize for this. They have said that they have published that a manifesto allegedly reveals that Steven Crowder had anti-white beliefs as he shot people in a school. They mistook the journalist working on this story, Steven Crowder, with the shooter. In the tweet, and they say that Steven Crowder was anti-white as he shot people. They later apologized, and unbelievable, as they apologized, because they felt bad about what they had just done, accusing Steven Crowder of a shooting. As they apologized, they said, we have great respect for the journalistic work of Steven Crowder. I didn't have it on my bingo card that in 2023 we would have Steven Crowder pulling a major scoop and Washington Times complimenting him because they have to, because they just falsely called him a shooter. Bravo, bravo. Whoever runs the physical universe has a sense of humor. God has a sense of humor, doesn't he? So, what can we conclude from this content of the manifesto? And I want to warn people that in the image I'm about to show, there is violent talk, there is racist, anti-white content. I'm not showing these to trigger people. If you believe that you are triggered by this violence, or if you have personal feelings about this case, I suggest you close I suggest that you close the stream. You don't need to be exposed to this, but I need to report about it because it's part of the news and we need to analyze what went on in the head of this shooter. So if you are not psychologically prepared to be exposed to violence, violent talk, and racist anti-white discussions, please stop the show now. And it's okay. It's not for everyone. Let's have a look, though, because I need to cover this from a news perspective. Death Day. 3-7-23. First thing I will note, there was an excellent analysis of the physical evidence by Dick Masterson, who pointed out that this is a book without rings, apparently. And it's a separate book from the one here with rings. So apparently there, and you can notice that the page form here is much more rectangular, whereas the page form is round here. So we're talking about two different physical books, at least, that these pictures must come from. Also, one note is the writing style seems different. Is it indicative of some fraud having had happened, or is it simply indicative of the fact that the shooter had different ways of writing certain things? Here, the number 7, for example, is barred. See, 7, bar. Horizontal bar. Now, if you look in another context of writing, number 7 on the ringed, notebook, number 7, as it represents a time, is not barred. Now, some people may have different ways of writing the number 7 in different contexts. Maybe when it's a date, that person tended to use the bar. Maybe when it's a time, they don't use the bar. So I'm not saying it's necessarily indicative of fraud or of the fact that this could come from two different writers, but I'm saying remain skeptical. We don't know. We don't know if this could have been written by someone else to make people believe that it's the manifesto. It could also be written by someone who was collaborating with the shooter. Everything is possible. Or maybe it's just a shooter who happened to write in different ways in different contexts. Spindly Opinion says, I write number 7 with a bar 90% of the time, but not 100%. Okay. Sometimes I will pronounce certain words differently with no real rationale. Yeah, it's certainly, in and of itself, it's not putting the whole story in doubt. But it's raising the question of, hey, could we get, please, at this point, the police? Because today I had to explore in my mind the hypothesis that Steven Crowder could have invented a fake manifesto so that we get a true release. Like, if you want to force the police to release the manifesto, it does seem that the best thing you could do, if you don't have access to the manifesto, would be to release a fake one in the hope that they have to correct the record and come out with the real one. I had to explore this hypothesis in my mind. Now, I believe that Steven Crowder is more serious than that in his journalism, and I believe that he must have done the correct checks. And the early behavior of the police and being all nervous about all this makes me believe that he's probably on the target. He probably is releasing the actual manifesto here. So a gun with flowers, a bullet target, 27th of March, 2023. Is that? Yes, 2023. Yeah. Today is the day. The day has finally come. I can't believe it's here. Don't know how I was able to get this far, this far, but here I am. I'm a little nervous, but excited too. Been excited for the past 2 weeks. There were several times I could have been caught, especially back in the summer of 2021. So first note here, this has been going on in preparation for a very long time. A very long time since 2021, that person thought they could be caught. So at least 2 years of preparation. None of that matters now. I'm almost an hour and seven minutes away. Can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm ready. I hope my victims aren't. My only fear is if anything goes wrong, I'll do my best to prevent any of the sort. God, let my wrath take over my anxiety. It might be 10 minutes. It might be 3, 7. It's gonna go quick. I hope I have a high death count. Ready to die, haha. And signed something. Maybe Audrey, maybe some other name, I don't know. Okay, so we're talking about a relatively low IQ, not super intelligent, young shooter. We have seen, you know, extremely organized manifestos before by high IQ. This is not one of those. This is a very emotional, anxiety-ridden, very nervous person who's not expressing a very complex political ideology here. It's someone who's caring about the proximal aspects of the shooting, who's talking about their nervousness, and who... We don't have much evidence on this page of political ideology. What is it? Why are they doing this? And to be clear about, you know, the fact that the name of the person is Audrey Hall. And so do we have here a female shooter? Here's the thing. It's always very hard, this case, because it's the case of someone who was a biological female, who was trans and so took testosterone. And so is that the case of a female shooter, female mass shooter, or is it the case of, well, when you take testosterone, you are changed toward the more the behavioral side that you would expect from a male, of course. And I have no doubt that the testosterone may have played a role. Not that perhaps this person was violent to some extent in their head. They had some hate against white people in their head. But the testosterone most likely played an important role in transferring this hate toward action. Because it is very rare that we see a low testosterone person, a female, take on a shooting. So, continuing in the more violent part of this manifesto, kill those kids, those crackers going to private fancy schools with those fancy quackies plus sports backpacks. So, very, very revealing here. We have a position of someone who feels lesser than society. I mean, to the point where someone with khakis and sports backpacks is someone that they perceive as superior, as bragging of something, as being privileged. A sports backpack. That is a symbol of status for this person as they undertake their shooting. Shady Jesus says, JF, great analysis. Regarding the consistency of handwriting, look at the number 2 on page 3 at the line 10 a.m. And then later in the same line, they use a 2 with a loop in it, with a loop on it. And then the person writing this is clearly struggling with their identity. They aren't fully committed to writing numbers consistently. So the 2 at the line 10 a.m. And then later in the same line, they use the two with a loop on it. 10 a.m. 2. I don't know what you're talking about. The same line. Okay, the two that is here. Okay, I see it. The two that is here is an attached two using cursive, the cursive two. And the two that is here is a categorical printed two. Yes, that's interesting. That's interesting. Perhaps this was a shift that was happening in this person's mind from cursive to non-cursive and happening perhaps at too great of a frequency. Very interesting. Continuing to read. With their daddy's Mustangs plus convertibles. Fuck you, little shits. I wish to shoot you, weak ass. Dicks with your mop yellow hair. That is very interesting. So this person had a hate specifically for the Aryan-typed pale hair that they characterize as yellow. This is very evocative of people calling Donald Trump the orange man. For Audrey, white people that had Mustangs and that were socially, that had high status socially, they were yellow-haired. In the same way that for the left, Donald Trump was the orange man. Wanna kill all of you little C's, a bunch of little F's with your white privileges. Fuck you, F. And they use the F word for homosexuals. Now, I'm sure that using the F word in this way for homosexuals must have led some people to think, oh, this person hated everyone. But this person didn't go to a homosexual sauna to kill homosexual people, first. Second, you have to understand the internet culture in which the F word is used profusely as a punctuation mark, not to express actual hate against actual homosexual people. Now, if this shooter had some degree of internet familiarity, it may be the case that they have used the F word here without having a hateful intent against homosexuals. So I wouldn't jump to the conclusion just because there's this slur in there to say that this person had a multi-categorical broad hate against everyone, because I don't see any, if there's no other sign of the F word use being used in a context where it does mean anti-homosexual hate, I don't think that this person had anti-homosexual hate. I think that they may just have been in a culture that was leading to the use of that word regularly. Later schedule, death day, lunch maybe around 11 a.m., 1 p.m., interrogation mark on the little note here. So uncertainty around when this person would have lunch. And here this person was planning the day, 6:30, desired. Is that what's written? Get dressed at 7 a.m. Something said with stuffed animals plus possessions. So perhaps some disposing of some possession that they had. I don't know exactly. Maybe a picture. Maybe take a picture with these things, or maybe hand these things to someone or place them somewhere. 9 a.m. Eat breakfast at home. And here you can see perhaps a deranged mind here. Home is circled with a heart. That's an important aspect. Now, someone who feels the need to highlight how they love their home is very often someone who actually doesn't love their home. And or someone who has had trauma with respect to previous homes. A normal person loves their home, but they don't write it with a heart in a notebook, okay? So when you write home and you're like, oh, the feeling of home is so great. Heart home. You're probably in the deranged category of having had trauma around your home and needing to kind of recite the love that you have from your home because you really don't have it. If you need to recite it, you're not super confident in it. So I interpret this heart around the home as someone who was not comfortable at home or who had some leftist ideas around the home being a place of violence and a place of non-trans acceptance or something like this. 9:30 a.m. Pack up special belongings and backpacks. 9:50, test knife, car glass, breaker. Dad's old cars. So they wanted to test at 9:50 that their glass breaker was efficient. 10 a.m., leave for Royal Range, presumably a range where some firearms may have been stored. 19 to 20 minutes. 10:20 a.m., gear up, set up guns in the trunk, assemble, plus get out. The rest with magazines inside. 11:20 a.m., final videotape. Oh, so we are learning from this schedule that there was a videotape or that there was at least an intent to film a videotape. So is it possible that there is a videotape that we've not been told about? I would like to have this videotape. I would like to have the digital data that was recorded then, if there is. 11:35, leave for the Covenant School. Noon, arrive at the Covenant. Check parking lot for security. 12:05, arrive in designated parking space. 12:05 to 12:10, prepare for attack. 12-something, lock and load all weapons. 12:33, open fire towards whatever. Swinter, I don't know what's written there. Time Zoli, I don't know what that means. Time Sli, XXX. So here you have the whole planning. This was not a super complex individual, but we can get, and most importantly from this page, we can get that this was someone very much in the leftist mindset. This was someone with a complex of inferiority with the rest of society, someone frustrated at these successful people, these fancy schools, these private fancy schools, these people with sports backpacks. I mean, in a way, it's more pathetic than I expected because I expected this person to have had some kind of constructed belief around hating Christians or hating white people. But we're talking about someone who has a very poorly constructed set of beliefs that are mostly just emotionally driven hate and disdain toward white people, who has no particular argument. They just feel they feel envious. Yes, DK Shadow. They feel less than others, and they want to kill what they perceive as successful people. And it turns out that it's these yellow hair white people. Listen, that is it. So if this manifesto is correct, and if there's not secrets being kept out there, those would be my conclusion on the Nashville shooter. It was a... This person didn't have to be anti-white. I think this person, based on the low level of political ideology that's being expressed here, this person has been made anti-white by per media narrative. This person was probably fundamentally envious to begin with. This person was fundamentally envious, fundamentally resentful of successful society. But what made this person make a shooting against a Christian or successful private school of sorts? It was ultimately the media, the anti-whiteness of the media, that presented to this person the perfect culprit by saying, those are the successful people. It's those white people. It's those white people with pale hairs, with Mustangs, with these people with privileged in private schools. So this is a case of serious grounds for media-induced violence. Because I think that this person, if they didn't have a conception, if they didn't have a target to attach their envy to, and this target was white people, I believe that Audrey here might not have ended up committing a shooting. I believe that if Audrey had a perception that, oh yeah, there are people who are successful, but it's not this targetable white people that the media gave them, I don't believe they would have gone on into a shooting specifically in a white school the way they did. I think there is a good case to be made that she may have been induced by the media to go into that hateful shooting. But other than this, we're not talking about someone who was very intelligent, and we're not talking about someone who had much to bring to society. Before we end, I have this argument against Brett Weinstein's appeal to deprive oneself of porn. Brett was saying, you would think that the fact that porn causes impotence would be a deal breaker for any sane man. I suspect that absent erection pills, it would be. Since it's my job to disagree with Brett Weinstein until he reads The Revolutionary Phenotype, I was like, okay, what could you say positively about porn? And here we go. My argument for porn. A word of caution to those who would want to implement Brett Weinstein's advice and completely deprive themselves of the porn stimuli. There is very little evidence of a causal effect between porn and erectile dysfunction. What we have here is some correlations between porn use and people complaining to a doctor about erectile dysfunction. We know that this difference appears to affect young men who are part of the Pornhub generation, and we know it does not appear that the females of this generation suffer from the same issue. Then, we also know that there is some rather anecdotal evidence that deprivation of porn might fix the problem in certain cases. You will see many publications conclude from these facts that there is porn-induced erectile dysfunction. But an alternative explanation for this data is almost never considered. The new generation of females may just have become too ugly or too annoying to be worth having sex with, on average, compared to the previous generation. let's not forget that in parallel to all this data acquisition, generations differ. For instance, with obesity having become a major problem. On the other hand, studies consistently fail to examine the possibility that porn may actually improve someone's sexual life. For instance, porn could help with recentering the sexual experience around male satisfaction. It could help couples develop fantasies of female submission, which in any case is needed for them to enjoy sex. It may help males project an initially fictitious version of themselves that they actualize into reality later. For that, see Trevor's concept of self-deception as a tool to reach an originally unachievable goal. Finally, it may help men increase their standards and give them confidence to approach higher beauty females. By providing models of such females through videos. None of these hypotheses are ever explored by studies in this field. Porn can only be bad, or it can be good if it can serve some feminist function within the couple. We have to call it out, the data on porn is biased via an ideologically driven method of acquisition, and it's not trustable. Finally, porn may have an important game theoretical role in a society, and this is the most important theoretical support for porn. I think that's a solid argument. Porn may have an important game theoretical role in a society where women have decided to retool sex for general hedonism, as psychological therapy for self-esteem issues, or as a tool for social ladder escalation or money-making, i.e. everything else than what sex really is for, which is making babies. Porn allows infinite amounts of hedonistic sex to be available to men at extremely low cost and many times in ways that are more pleasurable than having sex with the average 4 out of 10 modern feminist. As such, porn is the call-out of the imitability of the hedonistic version of sex that women on the birth pill are offering. Suddenly, their offering is worth nothing, except if it is to make babies. Porn could have this role. It could have this very positive role of lowering the value of the random crack horse on birth pill. Because when you have porn, you have an option to have sexual relief at very low cost without having to go through all of the emotional mess of charming a woman who wants you to wear a condom or who is on the birth pill, i.e. obtaining non-reproductive sex that is absolutely valueless for you. So I believe that porn lowers the value of all these women and ultimately forces them to stop the birth pill and be useful in a way that porn cannot be, which is forces them toward baby making and reproductive sex. Simeon says, I would totally agree with JF here. I have zero attraction to white women because they all have a disgusting non-feminine personality. They seem mostly exempt from this personality. Foreign non-white women seem mostly exempt from this personality degradation. Okay. Yes, I believe you are talking about the submissive Asian female. Maybe. Now, there was a big... debate around Vicious saying something about Jesus. Jesus was this, or actually the debate has involved so many people on the chat that I actually cannot scroll back to it. You guys have typed way too much. And now they are talking about whether Jesus was dressed. Vicious says he had clothes, you moron. They were over his shoulder. That's a relatively minor detail, isn't it? Whether Jesus was dressed, you mean at the moment of crucifixion? Does it really matter? Are you trying to judge Jesus by the prude morals of clothing of the modern world? Anyways, okay, so now new guy is quoting the Bible, and they laid their hands on him and took him, and one of them that stood by drew a sword and smote a servant of the high priest and cut off his hair. And Jesus answered and said unto them, Are you come out as against a thief with swords and with staves to take me? Yeah, well, I was daily with you in the temple teaching, and you took me not. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. And they all forsook him and fled. And there followed him a certain young man having a linen cloth cast about his naked body. And the young man laid hold on him. So there was a linen cloth. So I think that settles the conversation. Jesus had a linen cloth onto his body, but otherwise it was otherwise naked.